I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Parallax is you observe an object.
Fuck you!
Let's try Michael in Florida. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Hey, first and foremost, I want to say under my current taxes, I just got information from my accountant. Under Trump now, I'm going to pay $4,200 more in taxes than I did in 2017. I have now no individual exemptions, and I now have to pay more in property taxes because of limits. I'm a middle-class American, and my family's now going to spend $4,000 more. Thank you. My second point is, you're a marshmallow. You guys are snowflakes. Those cops were professional. The FBI, Stone is facing 7 felony counts, 5 for lying to authorities, 1 for obstruction of justice, the other for witness tampering. They were gentlemen. They came to your house. They didn't throw you down on the ground. You say your dogs were terrified and your wife was out in the street without her shoes on in the Florida freezing cold 59 degrees. You guys are snowflakes and you're going to go down in prison. You're facing 40 plus years, Stone. It's coming down on you.
All right, Mike. Don't bet the ranch, muchacho. I don't know where you are, but I guarantee you won't tell us your name and your address because you're ashamed of what you just said, and you should be. Thank you very much for your call.
Wait, hold on. I want to ask Michael a question. I got to ask Michael a question because we're getting these seminar callers now. So Michael, who told you to call here today?
No one told me to call here, Owen. I've been watching Alex Jones for 20 years since he's on Austin Cable Access. No one tells me to call. When someone has a good point and puts you in a quarter, obviously it's a conspiracy. Yeah, I'm being paid by Soros. He sends me a check every week to watch your show and call in. Yeah, right.
Fuck you!
On this edition of Parallax Views, we return to the topic of GOP dirty trickster Roger Stone, who is in the news yet again.
A federal judge in Washington has set former Trump campaign advisor Roger Stone's trial for November 5th. Stone left the courtroom just a short time ago.
He's facing 7 charges related to the special counsel's Russia investigation, including obstruction, lying to Congress, and witness tampering. Stone has pleaded not guilty to all of those charges.
Just who is the real Roger Stone? The man, or perhaps man-child, behind the image of a House of Cards-style Republican supervillain. Joining us on this edition of the show to answer that question is former Roger Stone collaborator Robert Morrow, who famously, or infamously, depending on your perspective, co-wrote The Clintons' War on Women with Stone. This is a completely uncensored conversation with Robert regarding his friendship and eventual falling out with Stone. Fair warning, this is completely uncensored. I do not claim to hold all of Robert Morrow's views, but I wanted to let him speak as openly as possible about Roger Stone in the hopes of getting inside the mind, the psychology of the dirty trickster that's been taking the news by storm lately. Again, warning, this conversation is no holds barred. A lot of graphic stuff and a lot of salacious details on the various escapades of Roger Stone. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to Parallax Views, Robert Morrow.
Hey, glad to be here.
So, Robert, I wanted to have you on Parallax Views because Roger Stone has been in the news lately. Just yesterday, we found out that his trial is set for November 5th, and you collaborated with Roger Stone on a book or two. You helped with his LBJ book and, of course, the Clinton's War on Women. How did you end up working with this dirty trickster, Roger Stone?
Well, my specialty is the JFK assassination, and I know a lot about Lyndon Johnson murdering John Kennedy using the CIA and so forth. And so in the summer of 2013, which was the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination, we found out on Twitter that Roger Stone was going to write a book on the JFK assassination that was going to indict Lyndon Johnson. And so when I saw that, I kind of met him over Twitter, and then I started emailing him at stone@stonestone.com, his email address, started emailing him some really good JFK research that supported his thesis that LBJ killed JFK. I mean, Stone only knew what Richard Nixon was telling him. I knew a lot more to back it up.
How did you end up working with him on the Clinton's War on Women?
Well, let me finish about his other book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. So in the summer of 2013, I flew down to Miami to meet Roger, pardon my allergies, and I was also going down there with a friend, Scott Kaiser, to interview some really hardcore anti-Castro Cubans. And so after we got through talking to all the Cubans, and they still hate Kennedy to this day, I had dinner with Roger Stone at a Cuban restaurant in South Beach. And it was a good dinner, and turns out that we were compatible, you know, as far as, you know, knowing that LBJ had killed JFK, which the mainstream scholarship has not accepted, although that's the reality. Richard Nixon knew it. Barry Goldwater knew it. RFK suspected it. LBJ insiders knew it. Kennedy insiders suspected it. So in the summer of 2013, a few months later, Roger emailed me his entire manuscript on that book. And so I just went through it and just started dropping in the best JFK research that I could. So after that book was an amazing success. I would think that book, Roger's book on LBJ, was probably the number two book on the 50th anniversary. Bill O'Reilly's being number one, you know, more lone nutter garbage out of Bill O'Reilly. Roger Stone was the star book of everybody else's released that year, and in no small part to his marketing efforts and the fact that it's true. So after that, you know, Roger says, well, Robert, why don't you write a book on the Clintons, knowing that I was a longtime anti-Hillary activist since 2005. I had just much research, opposition research on Bill and Hillary Clinton. You know, I own hundreds of books on them. I've read many web pages on them. And so I said, sure. So we went to Skyhorse, and Roger got the contract to write the book, and I got a contract under Roger to co-author it with him. And so that's how we got together on the Clinton's War on Women.
Well, I'm just curious. I've always wondered. I know Roger Stone has done a few books with co-authors. Does he really contribute as much to those books, or is it more a name value type thing?
Well, he does, but he'll have somebody who will write the book for him, like Mike Colapietro helped him write The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. You know, even though I did drop in some really helpful material there. And I wrote about 85% of the Clinton's War on Women. He wrote about 15, but he had people working under him that wrote that 15%. So Roger likes to get people to do all the typing and the research and the hard work, and he'll like write a introductory chapter, and he'll be the front man for the book and the promoter of the book. He's not sitting down there, you know, writing every word. He probably reads the manuscript, but he's not writing it all for most of his books. He hires people to do that.
Well, it's interesting. I think you have quite a few personal recollections of Roger to share with my listeners. Let's start, though, with, you know, I think we can all very easily look at the negative side of Roger Stone. Was there anything positive to you that came out of Stone, any positive characteristics you found? He's obviously pretty charismatic.
Well, he hates the Clintons. That's positive. He hates LBJ. Anybody who knows who Lyndon Johnson was, you'd want to hate him. He hates the Bushes. If you know about all the crimes of the Bush family, you'd want to do that. I'm being kind of sarcastic here. You know, hating is as a positive characteristic, but all those groups are worthy of hating. On a more serious note, Roger is a charming person when he wants something. He is entertaining. He's interesting. He has absolutely decades and decades of political dirt and trivia and sexual gossip on people. I mean, for example, you know, he was telling me all about how Megyn Kelly, when she was an anchor at Fox, was having an affair with Brit Hume. And I've heard that from another source as well. And that's we need to know stuff like that, how compromised both Brit Hume and Megyn Kelly are, if that's true. And Roger insists it's true. And Roger would tell me stuff like, well, you know, Condoleezza Rice and the Republican and Donna Brazile, the Democrat, are lesbian lovers. And I would like quiz him, like, are you sure? Yes. And Roger, are you sure they're carpet munchers? Are you sure? He'd say yes. Roger was friends with a Democrat and a high-level Democrat lobbying firm that was telling him that Hillary had major health problems, and she does, and that she was camouflaging them from the public. And she barely could make the 2016 campaign. She even collapsed one day and got thrown in the back of a van. But we didn't know quite what her medical problems were, but we figured it had to do something with her, you know, having falling down and getting a concussion, and very serious a few years ago. So he's really good on political dirt, and it can be funny. You know, the flip side of all that is Roger Stone is a pathological liar who likes to abuse people and use people, and you're only worth something to him, like Donald Trump, if he can get something out of you. If you helped Roger before, and he thinks he's used you up and there's nothing more he can get out of you, he won't even return your phone call or your text.
Well, it's just, it's interesting to me. Where did maybe the point start where you and Roger started to have a falling out?
Well, a big one would be when I found out that Donald Trump was a child rapist and a longtime pedophile chum of Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, we knew they were friends because when we wrote the book, The Clintons War on Women, you know, Donald Trump's name was circled as one of the pedophiles and the child molesters by Alfredo Rodriguez, who was the butler for Jeffrey Epstein. After Jeffrey Epstein got arrested, Alfredo Rodriguez grabbed his book of contacts and went through it and started circling everybody who was either a pedophile, meaning somebody having sex with an underage girl, or somebody who facilitated and knew about it, you know, like maybe the gardener or the pilot on the airplane or people involved in procuring the underage girls. So I said, Roger, we're going to have to put this in our book that, you know, Donald Trump's name was circled. And Roger said, well, you know, let me talk to my boy, Donald Trump. See what he's going to have to say. He says, Robert, I talked to Trump, and he told me that, yes, I have been to Jeffrey Epstein's Palm Beach home, and I saw all these young girls around the swimming pool. I thought, how nice, you know, Epstein's letting all of the neighborhood kids swim into this pool. See, Trump is a very facile liar, just like Roger Stone is a very facile liar. And so we took that, and, you know, because I didn't really know Stone that well at that point, and I had no idea that Trump was like just this full-blown pathological liar to the Google power that we know now. I kind of took that at face value, and, you know, we kind of absolved Trump of pedophilia in the book. But after the book was published, that's when Donald Trump started getting sued by one of his child sexual rape victims. Her name was Jane Doe. You know, her legal name, or Katie Johnson, it's another pseudonym. And I found her lawsuits credible, extremely credible, when I started finding out how close Trump really was to Jeffrey Epstein. At that point, so you asked me, when did me and Stone have a breakup? I'm like, hey, I'm all for exposing Bill and Hillary Clinton. You know, they're criminals. But if you think I'm down for putting in a freaking child rapist in the White House, you're out of your mind. And so that's when I turned really hard on Trump back in June of 2016.
Well, I think we can get into the Katie Johnson case a little later. I want to stay on Stone here for a bit,
sure,
though. So, you know, you find that Stone doesn't want to go after Trump. I think there's been a lot of questions as to what his relationship with Trump really is, if he really is a big figure within the Trump campaign. What's your sort of take on that? He obviously knew Trump for a long time.
Well, I mean, factually speaking, Roger Stone was Donald Trump's closest political advisor for 40 years, since 1980. They've known each other extremely well over the decades and have interacted over the decades. And I think Stone did some lobbying for him in the 80s. And then when he when Donald Trump was running for the Reform Party presidency to destroy the party itself so that Bush could get elected in the year 2000. Roger Stone was there with him. So Roger Stone used to like to go to the Miss USA pageants or the Miss Teen USA pageants that Donald Trump owned. It would be held down in Miami. Roger Stone liked being in the aura of Donald Trump, this rich man with this high public profile. But by the time the 2016 campaign came along, Roger Stone was locked in a power struggle with Corey Lewandowski over who was going to be the head honcho in the campaign. And Corey Lewandowski won. And also Donald Trump had that fight with Megyn Kelly where he talked about blood coming out of her ears, her head, her wherever, you know, implying that, you know, out of her vagina, blood was spewing and everything. That caused such a media brouhaha that Stone was thinking, I've got to get out of this campaign because I've got a book to promote, The Clinton's War on Women. You know, Trump's going down the drain. There's no way he can win. I better get out. So Stone really kind of quit at that time, and then Trump said he fired him. It was really Stone leaving, in my opinion, thinking that Trump was a loser. And then Trump started winning regardless because the GOP base just loved this, you know, right-wing smack talker, totally politically incorrect. They were loving it. That's how many in the GOP base think and act and talk the way Donald Trump does. You know, if you're a GOP-based voter and you're at a bar, you know, can I use profanity here or not?
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, so, you know, a typical GOP voter would look at the TV and say, Hillary Clinton, what a fucking cunt. Okay, that's Donald Trump. Okay, that's who Donald Trump's representing. Okay, and so he has millions and millions of people that think like him and talk like him and feel like him. And that's why he was able to power through all of this, you know, liberal media, you know, outrage, you know, laughing at John McCain for being captured. The GOP base is not like John McCain. He stabbed him in the back on so many issues. So what am I getting at? When Trump started winning, Stone started thinking, well, I'm really for this guy. I never really did reject him. I've just left the campaign. I'll be working for him on the outside. And so Roger Stone spent much of the campaign trying to help out Donald Trump and pretend that he was relevant and kind of like a little boy looking up to his dad, like, hey, Dad, I planted this article for you. Hey, Dad, here's some more info for you. Hey, Dad, I'm doing this for you. Hey, Dad, I can get you an admin down in Florida. Who Donald Trump wanted to work for him for free. How about that? So Stone and Trump were collaborating throughout the 2016 campaign. I do not know when they had their last conversations, but they historically can't get away from each other.
What do you think, prior to him getting involved with the Trump phenomenon, do you think that, you know, in a lot of ways, it seems like Roger Stone was, as a political force, it seems like he was sort of over the hill and sort of trying to do different things like writing books and whatnot. Do you think he was becoming less relevant and saw this as an opportunity?
Oh, definitely. So Roger Stone, when I met him in 2013, was a man past his prime, over the hill, looking for a new gig, looking for some way to make money, absolutely exhausted with being a political consultant. So he just told me, I just got to get out of this. You know, it's just too much. When you're a political consultant, you got to fly around the country, fly around the world even, you know, constant travel, you know, from A to B to C, different states, different countries. He just wanted to be able to write books, you know, do interviews, you know, do, you know, viral campaigns on his products. And so he had not even met Alex Jones at that point. So through me and one of my friends in Austin who knows me very well, who knows Alex Jones very well, I hooked up Roger Stone with Alex Jones. And before then, Roger Stone was, he couldn't even get on the Alex Jones show before 2015, 2014. How about them apples? He was trying, he would get his PR people to send an email or call the Alex Jones, but he couldn't even get on the Alex Jones show. That's how washed up Roger Stone was. And so when the Trump campaign started blowing up, Roger Stone, you know, was thinking, I'm going to ride this Hawaiian wave all the way into the White House if I'm lucky. And then, you know, I'm sure he was dreaming, like, I'm going to be a highly paid political consultant. You know, I'll get paid millions of dollars a year to do nothing. I'll have an insight with the Trump campaign. and it totally blew up in his face.
It's fascinating to me because Stone often reinvents himself as well. You know, he'll say he's a Nixon conservative, and then he'll become a libertarian, and then he's a Trump guy. What does Roger Stone really believe? Does he believe anything?
He believes in the narcissistic advancement of Roger Stone. Privately, Roger Stone believes Donald Trump is an imbecile, a complete idiot, one of the dumbest people you'd ever meet. Now, he kept telling me, he said, well, Robert, you know, Trump's the only one who's going to really attack the Clintons like they need to be attacked. The other ones won't do it. So that was the one good thing Trump had going for him. But Roger Stone has no respect for Donald Trump. He's always extremely frustrated with him. So what does Roger Stone believe? I mean, I guess, is he a libertarian or is he a libertine? I mean, he's supporting an authoritarian. I mean, I am a libertarian. So a true libertarian would be revolted at Donald Trump, who believes he's above the law, who's a complete liar, who uses people, abuses people. That's not a live and let live philosophy. That man is like a malevolent criminal. So, but that doesn't bother Roger Stone at all, because he had these dreams of being a big shot DC guy if Donald Trump ever got into the White House, and it's completely blown up in his face. And, you know, he says he's broke. You know what? That's the one thing I'm going to believe Roger Stone on. I cannot believe that he has a thin nickel to his name after all these legal fees. You know, he rents homes in New York and Fort Lauderdale. He's had to move out of his Fort Lauderdale home. Knowing Roger Stone, I would bet he's behind on the rent on the Fort Lauderdale home and has not been paying it for months. He said he had to give up his health insurance. I assume he's telling the truth on that. I mean, I used to text and said, Roger, you know, you're going to end up in your old age eating Alpo out of the can. You're a genius, you know? So what does he believe in? When I first met him in 2013, he says, well, my top two issues are gay marriage and abortion rights. And then right away, I knew he had no money. Because anybody, if that's their top issue, gay marriage, meaning he's for it, and abortion rights, meaning he's for it, you know, you don't have any money, or you have the wrong priorities. You should be calling it saying, I'm for tax cuts, I'm for cutting, you know, spending, I'm for ending government programs. But, you know, when you're a poor man's libertarian, that's what your angle is, the social issues. And ironically, you know, Trump's political positions is the exact opposite of what Roger Stone truly believes in his heart.
Well, you know, Stone is just such a, I mean, he's like a character out of a B-movie at times, the way he presents himself. It's hard to get a grasp on what he actually believes. And I think you've really pinned down the psychology of Roger Stone. I mean, he seems like a person that is a pathological liar. He can't stop it. And
Definitely. Keep going.
Well, I was going to say, if you could talk a little bit more about the psychology of Roger Stone and just the inability for him to stop lying. I know you've told some stories about him talking about his early years and how he learned about how lying was so important to him.
Yeah, well, so one of Roger Stone's earliest anecdotes that he tells about himself was that he was in first grade, and he told everybody else in class that John Kennedy, that Richard Nixon is going to make you go to school on Saturday. And he saw how effective that lie was when all the kids voted for John Kennedy over Richard Nixon. And Stone's been that way ever since. He likes the power of a lie, and he lies constantly about all kinds of things. You know, when I was elected Travis County Republican chairman, he says, well, I sent out 20,000 Trump Morrow robo phone calls. He didn't do anything of the sort. When he had the flu or something and his book was being delayed a few years ago, one of his books, he says, I sent off my test results to the CDC, and they came back and said that your medical problem is consistent with somebody being poisoned with polonium, like the Russians poison people with polonium. When we published our book, The Clintons War on Women, we got a lot of one-star reviews from, you know, angry Democrats, and Roger Stone says, we've checked with Amazon, and they've traced the web addresses of all those one-star reviews to the Hillary Clinton campaign headquarters in Brooklyn. You know, again, a pathological lie, or he'll say, you know, Barbara Bush was cursing at Jeb Bush's, you know, campaign kickoff rally, and she was drunk and cussing, and she wasn't. He just lies. He's just a constant pathological liar. And so you asked me about his psychology. So what does this mean? He's a very, Roger Stone is a very insecure person. He's a little man. He's not an alpha male. Anybody who would, you know, be so subservient to Donald Trump for decades, you have to have a psychological problem. Roger likes to see men fuck his wife. Okay, and he's taking out advertisements, you know, asking them, begging them to do that. You know, muscular men with big penises, he wants them to fuck his wife in front of him. So he's the original cuck.
That's all confirmed, too.
And that's confirmed. I mean, confirmed, that's how Roger Stone got kicked off the Bob Dole campaign in 1996, because the National Enquirer exposed that Roger Stone and his wife were running ads in swinger magazines where Roger was begging men to come fuck his wife in front of him. Okay? So, and he was publishing his own picture and his wife's own picture in the magazine. And so that's who Roger Stone is. That's a cuck, you know. And some men are turned on by being a cuck. Not me. But Roger is, and so he's the original cuck, Roger Stone.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, too, because I think there's a lot of, like, salacious sexual scandals one could tie to Roger Stone. And I personally don't care.
No, there isn't. Name some.
Well, I mean, the Manhattan Madame.
Okay, correct. So apparently he's had an adulterous affair with a Manhattan Madam and had a baby with her in the past couple of years. So, you know, Roger, he has a pretty wife. Her name is Nadia. She's very nice. And yet, she's in her 60s. She looks great for a woman in her 60s. And yet Roger just feels compelled to have all these mistresses, you know, to cheat on his wife with. And the Manhattan Madam was one of them. So, good point. You named two. Yeah. And so, oh, yeah, I'd be talking to Roger, you know, like he would call. And I would talk to him, and he'd say, well, I was up late last night. I was eating pussy at the sex club until 4 a.m., you know. And once texted me a picture of his mistress from New York, and so on and so forth.
Ugh. I was going to say, I mean, I'm pretty libertarian culturally, too, but I feel like Stone is the type of guy that would, you know, have adulterous affairs and all of this. But then if someone else did it and he could attack them for it politically, he would do that.
Well, of course. Roger Stone was behind, you know, that National Enquirer article smashing Ted Cruz for supposedly having five affairs with women that came out in the 2016 primary, I think right before the Indiana primary. Of course, you know, he's going to use dirt on somebody else. What else would he do about it? Roger says he's a trisexual. He'll try anything sexually. Now, what does that mean? I mean, is he gay, too? Is he bisexual? I mean, I'm beginning to wonder about Roger, you know. I take it back. There are numerous sexual scandals about him, you know. But he would love to use dirt on somebody else, as would I. You know, I like delving into political dirt on these creeps who run for office and exposing them. They all deserve that, as Donald Trump does as well, meaning he deserves to be exposed. So, you know, I table my objection to your point.
Well, you know, I think there's the other aspect that you were getting to. He's this very insecure man, and
yep.
It seems like he is obsessed with, you know, currying favor with whoever, you know, can get him farther along, as you said, with Trump.
But yeah, but think about who Trump is. What a low-life sleaze backstabber, and liar, and that's who Donald Trump, that's who Roger Stone is, like, the biggest sycophant for. Like, Jack Valenti was a sycophant to Lyndon Johnson, letting Lyndon Johnson sleep with his wife, Mary Margaret Wiley Valente. That's almost as sycophantic as Roger Stone to Donald Trump. So you have to be, you can't be an alpha male and behave the way Roger Stone has behaved. And you can't be a confident person. See, I mean, a confident person would like, okay, I'm a political, you know, operative. I have a body of work. I'm not going to play dirty. I'm not going to cheat. I'll let my body of work stand for itself. But Roger Dunn is not content with that, you know. And whatever money he's made in his life, I think he's spent it and he's blown it. So I really, you know, I really believe him when he said he's broke and he has no money. And he's in his mid-late 60s, you know. So he's a loser.
What's, it's really just, how do I put it? He's such a bizarre character, especially when it comes to that lack of confidence that you mentioned. Like, he's been an overall pretty successful person, and yet there's this sleaziness about him that you can tell he's not confident. You can tell he always needs to be in the limelight. Like when he got arrested by the FBI, you know, he's making a big spectacle out of it and using it to promote his new Russian collusion book.
He's an attention whore. He loves it. If he could be crucified on national TV, as long as he's the victim, he'd probably go along with it. As long as there was a 60 million people watching him.
You mentioned Stone being broke. I assume that since you worked with Stone, he probably owed you money at some point. Was there any financial shenanigans going on there?
Oh, well, you know, Roger Stone, his first check to me on the royalties for the Clinton's War on Women was for $17,000. I was expecting a much, much bigger check, okay? And then the next check was for a measly $3,000. Now, granted, our book was successful. It wasn't a New York Times bestseller, but we did make money. You know, Skyhorse made money. Roger Stone made money. But he gave me no transparency as to what his expenses were. So, you know, based on the fact that he is a pathological liar and the fact that he likes to use people like Donald Trump does, I mean, one wonders, if Roger Stone gave me $20,000 for writing the book, did he steal another $20 from me that was owed to me? That's a question worth asking. So, you know, I have no, you know, confidence in the character and nature of Roger Stone. And when I asked for transparency on the expenses, he wouldn't give it to me. So what does that tell you, you know? So that's another reason I don't like that guy, because I wonder if he was actually stealing from me. I wouldn't put it past him. It would be a kind of a normal thing for him to do. And what am I going to do, sue him and spend $40,000 in legal fees just to get $20,000 maybe? You can't. That's the way Trump operates. Trump would, like, hire all these people to work for his projects, small mom-and-pop companies who aren't used to paying lawyers lots of money to go fight legal battles. He'd have a $100,000 bill, then he'd arbitrarily pay him $75,000 and just say, take it or leave it. What are they going to do? Not take it, you know, and then sue him, and then Trump has better lawyers, drag the thing out for 2 or 3 years, you're a mom-and-pop company, you need to pay your wife and your kids and your family and your food and your shelter and your rent. That's how Donald Trump behaves again and again and again. He steals from people. So it would not surprise me if Roger Stone were stealing from me or stealing from anybody else. So I wish the man ill will. I hope he's convicted, and I hope he goes to jail. I forgot to tell you, the first check bounced. I had to call for another check, you know, that was not going to bounce. You know, bouncing checks is not a sign of somebody with financial stability.
Well, you know, I think the other interesting thing here is that there's a lot of parallels between Trump. As you mentioned, Trump has a pretty rabid base. I think that may be one of the reasons we haven't heard as much about Katie Johnson. But, you know, it's also true of Roger Stone. I mean, there's a cult of personality that goes into Stone. I mean, his defenders are vociferous in their defenses of him.
Well, I'm pretty vociferous in my attacks and assaults on him. You know, yeah, it is a cult of personality. So Roger likes to dress up and play a role as some sort of a phony supervillain, which he's not. He's just a human being like everybody else. And he is going through the ringer right now. He deserves every bit of that. And the reason you see him prancing around so cocky-like is because he feels sure that Donald Trump's going to pardon him come December of 2020, after Trump either wins the general election or loses the general election. And I think that's probably true. And if they can't find any state charges against Roger Stone beyond a campaign money laundering charge, he's probably going to walk. You know, he'll probably get convicted, you know, go on trial in November this year, you know, be convicted within a month, and then be sentenced maybe the next month, then go to jail, you know, at that time. And, You know, so he's hoping that Donald Trump will spring him from jail, because he will surely be convicted. He needs to be convicted.
Well, you know, I think another aspect of this that you are very aware of is, you know, I think Stone likes to put on this, like, nice, happy face. I'm just fighting the establishment. But, you know, people within his various areas of interest, from the JFK assassination on to other areas, find him to be a very angry, he's a very mean, vicious person.
Yes, he can be. But like he threatened Joan Mellon, who's a friend of mine, because he did not like her view on Mack Wallace, who was supposedly Lyndon Johnson's hitman, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. Joan wrote a book that debunks that. And since Roger really doesn't know much about the JFK assassination, you know, he has to be very defensive of his point of view, and he takes it to extremes. You know, Roger told me that he was going to, the next time he saw Andrea Skolnick, he was going to dump lighter fluid on her head and light a match. Now, if you know Andrea Skolnick, she probably inspires that feeling in a lot of people who she deals with, but there's no justification for threatening somebody like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's just awful. I mean, there's such
awful, awful.
There's just such a darkness to it all. I mean, even the I've heard rumors of that Stone has a lot of bigotry, especially towards the Jewish community. Is that true?
Roger Stone is a raving anti-Semite. He used to, like, quote Louis Farrakhan to me on Judaism. He would say it's a gutter religion. He would email me. He would call Jews Christ killers. He would say that he believed in the Jewish conspiracy against the white man, which I certainly do not believe, okay? I happen to be an anti-Zionist, which is not the same thing as being anti-Semitic, okay? But he thinks it's a Jewish conspiracy against the white man. And he says, you know, and Chris Ruddy believes that too. Chris Ruddy is a guy who is a good friend with Bill Clinton and a really good friend to Donald Trump. I mean, unlike Roger Stone, Chris Ruddy actually sees Trump in person, you know, at his country club, you know, down in Florida. So, but Roger Stone can't express these things publicly because it would hurt him business-wise about what he really thinks about Jewish people. I mean, he is just hardcore anti-Semitic. Now, he will work with Jewish people. I know some people who are Jewish who work with him, but I think he keeps it under wraps with them, his sentiments, his true sentiments.
You know, I guess the other aspect that we sort of touched upon before is, you know, he's sort of sex-crazed in a lot of ways, it sounds like. And I know you had a few stories that you've been publicizing about things he's told you about his wild escapades.
Oh, you mean the time that he had the time he had an affair with Ann Coulter? That one in particular? Yeah, Roger Stone was telling me that he used to have an affair with Ann Coulter. I think it was at the Marriott. If there's a Marriott in Fort Lauderdale, that's probably where it was at. I'm not sure. And he said he cut off the affair, and then he told me about Ann Coulter. He said she's skinny. He said in a sickly voice, like, she's skinny, like that. And he just couldn't take it anymore, you know, so he quit seeing her. But Ann wanted to keep seeing Roger for whatever reason. I guess she just couldn't resist, you know, his charms. But he said he had fucked Maureen Dowd, that's a liberal columnist for the New York Times, said she had big titties. This is years ago. There's this daughter of a New York grocery titan who Bill Clinton has his arms around creepily. And Roger Stone told me he came in her mouth one time. That's what he said.
He sounds like he's a really he doesn't hold anything back with people he knows in private, and he does not sound like a very pleasant person. When I heard about the Randy Credico story with the therapy dog Bianca, I was like, I don't know, this sounds like a bit out there. But the more I heard from people that have known Stone, it sounds like he can get very vicious once you cross him.
Yes, and he's gotten vicious with me on texting and stuff, and I've gotten vicious with him. And, you know, maybe some of that he's exaggerating a little bit, and he's just kind of venting. But then you don't know that when he says, he's, you know, yeah, I know where you live, you know. I'll take you on mano a mano, like he would text me, you know, to Randy Credico, I'm going to take your dog. You know, that's going to get him a witness tampering charge right there, you know? So, you know, how much of that is real, how much of that is venting, I don't know, but it's unacceptable.
Was, is there any specific instances where he went off with you and you had to sort of push back on him a little bit?
Not in person, you know? I mean, you know, I don't know. Let's see, what are some texts that I've sent Roger Stone? I'm going to pull my phone out right here and look it up. I've still got them here. Let's see here. We have not been talking very much lately. And I don't really hate him. I just want him to go to jail. Because with that, it's going to be a lifetime achievement award for Roger Stone going to jail. So I'll text some stuff like, child rapist and lunatic, loser in chief, Donald Trump going down hard in 2019. And let's see here. And let's see what he says. Oh, here we go. Let's see. I'll say something. This is July of last year. I said, why do you shill for a mentally unstable traitor to our country? You got to be ashamed of yourself. That's what I text him. And he says, you suck, Bill Clinton's cock. Go fuck yourself, trust fund asswipe. And I said, you remind me of a homosexual cuck submissive crawling on the floor of a dog collar around his neck, and Trump is the one who you put your money on? You're a weak, pathetic piece of shit who's never worked a day of his life. Anytime you want to meet me mano a mano, I will pound your fat, lazy, ugly ass into the ground. Go fuck yourself. And I say, you won't do shit, cuck man. He says, I know where you live, asshole. I'd watch your back if I were you. And I said, well, at least I won't be eating Alpo out of the can in my golden years like you will be. And he says, you won't be seeing your golden years. I don't take his shit. Okay? I'm not worried about him, motherfucker.
Well, I know, I'm pretty sure there's a few people that aren't taking his shit. I know Joan Mellon, when he threatened her, she went to the FBI.
She went to the FBI, and I'm glad she did. And if she could ever find that email that he sent her, I'm sure it would be made public. I've talked to her about it. She can't find it right now. But, she did go to the FBI, and she needed to. And so Stone's a bully, and he could have just done nothing. So if Joan Mellon writes a book he doesn't like, he can just be quiet about it and just, you know, stay to his lane. But he can't help himself. He's just incredibly insecure. He's a small man. He's not confident. He's not an alpha male. So that's why he behaves the way he does. So I think his game plan is this: is that he's thinking, I'm probably going to go to jail for maybe 10 months or so. Then Trump's going to pardon me. Then I can spend the rest of my life being like G. Gordon Liddy after he got out of jail. And I can go on the Trump we got screwed tour for the rest of my life. And, you know, give lectures to Trumpkins who cannot believe that Donald Trump got his ass kicked in the 2020 election and is being prosecuted by the state of New York for various crimes. It's a grievance tour. I think Stone thinks he has the Roger Stone, Donald Trump grievance tour all set up as his end of year's game plan. But I hope he spends some time in jail first. That's what I hope.
Well, you know, I like the way you described it. I think that's a perfect encapsulation. Is he's a bully. He's the type of person that, you know, he's a small man that would have picked on some kid in school for being nerdy or a bookworm or something. I mean, he just seems like a very rough and tumble bullying, like the
No, I don't know about that. In high school, I was just reading recently, in high school, the football jocks would do nothing with him. People would make fun of him because he had a funny-looking head. I don't know if he was a bully in school or not. I do know he was like just a hardcore right-wing nut from an early age. You know, so, and all, there is one thing I like about Roger Stone. Roger Stone likes the negative campaign, and so do I, JJ, because there's so many scumbags who run for office, Republican Democrats, who are just the worst vile snakes. They're rapists like Donald Trump. They're murderers like George Herbert Walker Bush. They're murderers like Hillary Clinton at Waco. And they need to be held to account. And they need to be exposed savagely. And Roger Stone, to his credit, is willing to do that. I mean, so when Donald Trump, who, by the way, is a sexually abusive rapist himself, when he brought Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, and Paula Jones, and Kathy Shelton to his press conference before the debates, and just threw that in the face of Bill and Hillary Clinton, that was beautiful. None of these other GOP cocksuckers would do something like that. They would never, ever call out Bill Clinton for being the rapist that he is, even though Donald Trump is a rapist himself. They'd never talk about Hillary murdering everybody at Waco. They would never, you know, give poor Kathleen Willey, who got terrorized by Hillary Clinton, by Jack Palladino in the late 90s before her deposition to Paula Jones, because they would never give her a platform. So I'm trying to compliment Roger Stone here. He is willing to be a savage negative campaigner, and oftentimes he is telling the truth about these scumbags. But the problem with Stone is he's also willing to lie and willing to make it up if that suits his purposes.
Before we move on into talking a little bit about the Katie Johnson case that sort of led to your falling out with Roger, I just wanted your take. He has a new book coming out called The Myth of Russian Collusion, The Inside Story of How Donald Trump Really Won. What do you make of him sort of using this whole FBI arresting him to sort of sell and promote his book?
First of all, that's the same book he's already published. They just changed the title and he added a foreword and that's it. So he's ripping off the public. He's only added like a preface. It's the same book to his previous book. So it's a ripoff of the public. You know, of course he's going to try and make money off of his predicament any way he can. He has to cater to the hardcore Trumpkin base to make any money. See, here's the secret to making money in politics in America. You don't have to win. Your side doesn't have to win for you to make money. All you have to do is advocate for a third of the country to make money. What I mean by that? So let's say Trump only has 33% of the people who really, really love him forever. That's 100 million people who will buy your books, pay you to give lectures, pay you to be their political consultant, pay you because you have contacts to Trump. 100 million people. That's only a third of the country. You don't have to have 200 million people to make a lot of money. Even if you win the election, you make more money when you win the election than when you lose. But Stone understands that as long as he finds his constituency to advocate for, he can benefit from it. So he's a big fan of the Proud Boys. So Stone needs security. So he starts talking up the issues of the Proud Boys. And then they start doing security for him. And he says, well, I'm for, you know, Western civilization and heritage or whatever, you know. He'll say that. And he's doing that because he wants something from them. Or he'll go out west and he'll support, you know, the Bundys against their war against the government over grazing of land. And he supports them not because he really cares about the issue, but because he knows there's a constituency out there that's looking for somebody to advocate for them. And he can benefit from that.
Well, it sounds like in Stone's world, Stone is number one. He comes first, and anything he can use to end up on top, that's what he'll do. But if he can't use him, then to hell with him.
Yeah, but guess what? He's not on top. He's like a little cockroach about to be smushed by Robert Mueller. He's not on top. Even all the lying and ruthlessness. See, here's the deal with psychopaths, especially political psychopaths and business psychopaths. They go through life and they climb the ladder, and because they're so diabolical and ruthless and sociopathic, they advance. It's an edge going up the ladder. But they leave a string of so many people who they've used and abused and stepped on and ripped off and lied to. They have this growing pool of enemies for the rest of their life, and eventually sometimes it reaches a tipping point. And then it comes back to haunt them, and everybody is ready to pile on them. See, I used to be a friend of Roger Stone's, okay? But He talked smack about me in 2016 and said I was working for the Clinton campaign and David Brock was paying me. I'm just tired of that garbage.
Really?
Because I didn't want to support Donald Trump because Donald Trump's a freaking lunatic. Okay? He didn't respect my decision. Like, he didn't say, well, Robert, you know, we'll just agree to disagree. Okay? He starts attacking me. And it comes back to haunt him, just like it came back to haunt the Clintons. You know, if Hillary Clinton were actually a nice person, she could have beaten Donald Trump no problem. But she and Bill had 40 years of baggage of using, abusing, stomping on people, rape, sexual assaults, hiring private detectives to terrify sex victims and former girlfriends. They had built up such a pool of enemies that they couldn't even beat Donald Trump. Think about that.
And now we see a lot of people jumping ship from the Roger Stone train. I mean, Jerome Corsi has had a falling out with him. One of the things I respect about you is, you know, you have your issues with Stone, but I can tell you're telling the truth because you're not going after everyone involved with Stone. I've never heard you say anything bad about someone like St. John Hunt or Jerome Corsi. You're speaking the truth, and your story isn't changing about this one person.
Right. Well, I think they're both basically good people. I've met St. John Hunt once. I've talked to him several times. See, Roger Stone befriended St. John Hunt, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when St. John Hunt was probably, you know, just parking cars for a living in his mid-50s. He's a former musician, may have had a drug problem, I'm not sure. He seems to be a nice guy, has a beautiful wife. You know, life's not all bad when you got a beautiful wife. And so Stone helped him out. So St. John Hunt is the son of E. Howard Hunt. You know, people like me and St. John believe E. Howard Hunt was involved in the JFK assassination. As a side note for you JFK people out there, E. Howard Hunt used to spy for the Lyndon Johnson campaign on Barry Goldwater in 1964. Now, that's very strange because Goldwater is the kind of hardcore right-winger that E. Howard Hunt was. Why would E. Howard Hunt be doing that? Because E. Howard Hunt and Lyndon Johnson, unlike Goldwater, were involved in the JFK assassination. Jerome Corsi, you know, I pretty much basically respect him. I think he has some integrity. I mean, I agree with all of his books or his viewpoints, but I think he actually believes what he writes. And so the reason you see Stone have a falling out with him and with me and with Randy Cretico, because Roger Stone starts lying about all of us, okay? So, see, Roger Stone, if you know the Randy Cretico situation, Roger Stone would lie about him and say, you know, when everybody says that I made this phone call to Elliot Spitzer's dad, that was Randy Cretico doing that, because Randy Cretico does imitations of voices. Randy was imitating my voice, and he's lying. He's using Randy Cretico and lying. He's finding a weak person that he can pick on and he can lie about. And then when, you know, in the Mueller case, when Jerome Corsi has to tell the truth because he knows he'll go to jail if he doesn't, and it's unfavorable towards Roger Stone, Roger Stone starts attacking Jerome Corsi, who I think is a far, far more credible person than Roger Stone is. So look at all the enemies that he just generates just by going through life. People who worked with him before, people who were friends with him before, you know, he'll start lying about you if he can, you know, save his own skin. So, do you understand that? You know, it's his sociopathic behavior.
Well, it's like I said, it's that. What I like about you is that you're standing up to that bullying, because I may not be, I don't agree with Jerome Corsi on much, but I like that Corsi has been like, well, you know, Roger Stone is defaming me, and people like yourself and Jerome Corsi are standing up to the BS that Roger Stone is putting out there, and I respect that.
Well, thank you. Of course, I've always done that. I've never taken any guff from Roger Stone, period, end of story. I've helped him out so much, you think he'd be more grateful. You know, I turbocharged his book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, for free. I was his Sherpa through JFK research for Roger Stone, who knew nothing about it. I educated the man on many, many ins and outs of JFK research for free. And then I wrote him a good book on the Clintons' War on Women, and his first check to me bounced. And even his book on Jeb and the Bush crime family. Guess who Roger Stone called first to find out what sources they should use? I literally walked him through every single book they needed to buy and every bit of material they needed to put in that book on Jeb and the Bush crime family, which is, by the way, is a good book. You got to get that book too. And in fact, I did twice because Roger forgot everything that I told him, and then I had to tell him that again for free. So I do all these things for him for free. So how am I paid back? He smack talks about me, you know, because I'm not going to support a freaking lunatic for president. I've got more character and principle than that. Even though I don't like Hillary, there's no way I'm going to, like, you know, shill for Donald Trump.
I guess my last question to you is, obviously, I think you think that there will be a reckoning for Roger Stone. I take it you believe that the witness tampering is very real and that he's going down.
Oh, yeah, he's going down. He'll be convicted. And he will go to jail. It's just a question of does he get his pardon? And I think he probably will get his pardon. And I wouldn't want to be counting on Donald Trump at this point.
Well, I want to thank you again for coming on. If you could, real quick, Robert, I'd like to give you a chance to plug your work. And I always like to leave on a positive note if there's anything positive you can say for my listeners.
Well, I'll just do my Bill Clinton imitation. Hey, JJ, I want to tell you something, that you know what you are doing with this internet radio thing is just wonderful. Me and my wife are just so proud of you, and that son of a bitch, Robert Morrow, telling the truth about all these elite deviants and perverts, it just warms my heart. And so what people can do, there are two really good books you need to be buying. So Joan Mellon has written a really good book called Blood in the Water about the USA, Lyndon Johnson, and Israel attacking an American ship and trying to sink it. So I would say buy Joan Mellon's book, Blood in the Water. And then also, eventually, on JG's show, there's going to be a really good author named Jack Staley. His pen name is John Clarence. And his books on Amazon are called the Gold House Trilogy. It's about how Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon and the military stole billions of dollars in gold from White Sands Missile Range in the 60s and 70s. It's a story that's legit. It's not into the mainstream research, but it will be one day. So just buy those people's books. Buy Joan Mellon's Blood in the Water and go to Amazon.com and look up John Clarence's The Gold House Trilogy. And you'll be glad you did. Oh, and also, you can even buy Roger Stone's book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, because I helped make that book a much better production.
Well, hey, Robert, I want to thank you again for coming on Parallax Views.
It was an honor to be on your show, my friend.
Well, that does it for this very wild edition of Parallax Views. I told you that conversation was going to be untamed. And that's only part one. For Patreon subscribers, I'll soon be releasing part two of my conversation with Robert Morrow, focusing on the connections between Trump and Epstein, as well as the Jane Doe, Katie Johnson case, in which Donald Trump was accused of being involved in the rape of an underage girl. It's a very controversial topic, and Robert has his own opinions on it. So, if you want to hear more from Robert Morrow, please consider joining the Patreon page for Parallax Views. $5 donation. We're coming up with bonus content for you. And if you can't do that, please like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views to Parallax Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight. with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.